This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is Hemant Mehta for the Friendly Atheist Podcast. If you like what you're listening to, please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. I am going solo today. I'll be back next week with Jessica, but I'm doing this because I'm out of town as you are hearing this, so I recorded this interview in advance. Because I spend so much time writing about atheism and talking about it, it turns out I don't actually listen to a lot of atheist podcasts or watch YouTube channels about it myself. They don't usually tell me anything I haven't seen or heard before. But one exception to that rule is Thomas Smith. I listen to as many of his podcasts as I can because I always feel like I'm learning something new and useful and vital. Thomas Smith began podcasting in 2010 with a quest to read the entire Bible while providing critical commentary and humor along the way. That project soon led to many others. His podcast, Serious Inquiries Only, is a show about science, philosophy, politics, and skepticism. Another podcast, Opening Arguments, with co-host Andrew Torres, is a legal podcast that takes complex legal issues in the news and breaks them down in an accessible and entertaining way. Finally, Philosophers in Space uncovers and explains the philosophy behind your favorite works of sci-fi. Thomas and I talked about the rightward shift of some big-name atheists, why so many skeptics seem to be pushing conservative arguments these days, and what, if any, are the best strategies we ought to use to counter that misinformation. I think you'll enjoy the conversation, and I apologize in advance for the audio quality on my end, but thankfully, he sounds great, and he's the guy you want to listen to. Thomas, thank you so much for joining me here. So for people who aren't familiar with you and your work, can you tell us how you got involved in this world of atheism, philosophy, religion, all that stuff?
I'd love to. First and foremost, Hemant, I think this is the first time we've spoken since your glorious Jeopardy run that I just wanted to say congrats on. That was so cool. It was so fun watching you. And I was, oh, it was heartbreaker. I thought you were going to get that second one, but
I knew I didn't get that second one, and I was very, very okay not winning.
But that was so, so fun to see a friend up there doing great. That was super cool. So atheism, I started in around 20. So I got really into atheism and, you know, like a lot of us, kind of the Four Horsemen era. You know, I'm sure many people date before that, but for me, that was kind of like my age. It kind of made sense. You know, I was just graduating from college and I'd been raised religious. I imagine this is the same story as a lot of people have heard over and over, but you know, raised religious, but for me, I'm not from the South or anything. I'm not from like a really religious household, but like, you know, religious and more importantly, like super right wing. Getting into atheism, was really interesting. And this will sound funny at the time, probably with what we're going to talk about, especially, but the Four Horsemen were actually really influential in not only atheism. I was already an atheist. They didn't really like change my mind on that. They just made the arguments more fun, made them more clear, more interesting.
That's the same for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Taught me a lot about science. I particularly love Dawkins' book on evolution. The name's escaping. Greatest Show on Earth, I think.
Oh, is that what okay. It is? Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely one of them.
Yeah, it came out a little later. The time. His other ones, I think, had...
That was after The God Delusion. My favorite one of his was The Ancestor's Tale, which I think was the one he put out right before The God Delusion.
Right. I think I went back. I think I went back and read that after the fact because I wasn't like following him at that time. But anyway, really entertaining stuff and really I loved learning. But they actually, believe it or not, influenced me in not just atheism, but in dropping my conservative views. They actually, because it's part of the depressing part of it to me is how back then, they would, I still think obviously there are elements of conservatism and reactionary politics in them, of course, but it was just so matter of fact that they'd speak about, like, oh, you know, obviously the Democratic Party is knows more stuff, is more science based, like just right. Not a huge case they made or anything, but just by like that osmosis of these really intelligent people are all liberal at that time. Mm-hmm. and reject a lot of the conservative beliefs that I had specifically. And it was, I guess it was more about that. It was more like a rejection of, like, you know, being not understanding climate change, not just other arguments like that, where I was like, oh my gosh. And that was really instrumental to moving me fully left, to the flaming progressive, you know, I've become now. And anyway, around that time, I actually had a lot of recording equipment because, music was actually my first passion. And, because music's so important to me, I find everything to do to avoid doing it because it's too important. I do all the music for my podcast, but otherwise it was like this, procrastination gotten really out of hand. I've basically made a career out of procrastinating from doing the thing I really thought was my passion, you know?
So podcasting was a procrastination. Right. So
I had the mic around, and I thought, you know, as much as I was raised religious, or maybe like most Christians, I hadn't read the Bible and didn't know. Yeah, I knew the crap you hear, you know, just through the atmosphere of some of the stories. And I did, you know, a lot of the Sunday school stuff of teaching the obviously cherry picked, like the few good stories in the Bible.
Right.
And I was like, I'm just going to read this damn thing. At first I was looking for a podcast. I was like, give me a podcast to like go through it. And then obviously every single Bible podcast I found at that time in 2009-ish or whatever was like super religious, you know, going through the Bible. And I was just like, I can't listen to this. So I was like, you know what? I'll just be the change I want to see in the world. I'll just do this thing. I'll just read the Bible as an atheist all the way through. This is the worst idea. All the way through reading. And then I had heard, you know, Christopher Hitchens always say that the King James was the best. Another huge mistake. Oh, I should have asked if there's cursing on your show. Yeah. Is there cursing on your show?
Yes,
this is a clean show.
Go ahead.
Oh, cursing. Yeah. That was a huge mistake.
Anyone listening is like, it's so not a clean show.
Okay. And
I will say, I did not know you had embarked on that project when I started doing a YouTube version of exactly what you're saying.
Oh, sweet.
But yeah, like I started it and then it didn't take long to realize, oh no, what have I started?
Yeah.
Because I think you're like me, like now I can't stop.
You start in Genesis, man. You're like, this is great. Comedy heaven. Yeah. There's so many good stories. They're dumb, you know, and then you get to page 3 and every story you've ever heard of ever from the Bible is done. It's unbelievable. I'll never get over it. It's the funniest thing. And people are like, but what about Adam and Eve? Yeah, that's paragraph like one. It's so short. There's nothing. Oh, what about Noah? That's got to be, you know, surely because the epic movie was 3 hours or whatever.
That's got to be 30% into the book. No, that's got to
be several chapters with character arcs. And no, that's paragraph 7 roughly. And it's done after that. There's no detail. It's terrible. And then you get to, and then here's the other funny thing. The next level is people are like, yeah, you're right. And then you get to those begats. No, even that is like a couple pages early on. That's not the worst of it. Cause you can just kind of, you know, I blew through that, like, whatever. I'm not going to I read almost every word, but not quite. And some of the stuff I was like, all right, begat, fuck it. Who cares? Nobody's going to process this. And then you get to just hours and pages of nothing. Like these really weird stories of these people fighting different people or, you know, collecting a mountain of foreskins or doing just the weirdest shit. And it's mostly boring. There's like a few, the biggest sin of the Bible, in my opinion, is how boring it is. Like that's bigger than all the genocide, all the other stuff. It's just so fucking boring. And nobody
it's
knows.
It's full of genocide, but also it needs an editor. And that's, that's
at least make your genocide entertaining. Come on. No, it's terrible. And
how far did you get into that podcast
I finished.
You went through the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, my original plan was absolutely fucking stupid. I was like, I modeled it after these Bible a day for a year podcasts that the Christian ones I saw. I was like, I'll do that Bible something a day for a year. I divided it up, you know, and that was an impossible pace to maintain. I did it for like a couple weeks And then I was like, this is impossible. I hate it. And then I started, you know, okay, maybe I'll finish it in like 5 years. And it eventually stretched. I did finish it though in like 6 years, I think. And it was interesting that I got through it. The other thing that nobody knows about the Bible, except us who've read it, is the New Testament. The only thing that matters, really, besides the first page that has all the stories we've heard of, the New Testament is what? It's like, I did the math just for fun. It's like, I want to say it's like 28% of the Bible. It's like a tiny portion of the Bible. Most of it, the lion's share of it, like a super majority of it, is this boring shit that nobody knows anything about.
It is not half and half.
Oh, anyway, so that got me into, and then I eventually was like, all right, I'm tired of doing a podcast where all I get to do is read this shit. So I started another atheism podcast to maybe, you know, talk about more issues around atheism and all that kind of thing. And that led to what's now my mainstay is Opening Arguments. Cause it's a funny story. I was doing a debate on abortion, I think, if I remember correctly, with a Christian. And he asked me, you know, this typical conservative bullshit of like, point to where it says in the Constitution that you can have an abortion. And I was like, well, at that time, I was like, you got me there. I actually don't really know much about the law behind that. Like, I support the right, but I don't, you know, I wasn't very well versed in that particular line of argument. I was just more versed in like the philosophy of it rather than where it's actually justified in law. And so I punted that a little bit, I think. And then I got an email from somebody that I just could tell knew what the hell they were talking about. And that was Andrew Torres, who is also an atheist and a very brilliant lawyer. And that led to starting Opening Arguments, which is a law-based show, not much to do with atheism. Occasionally we tackle atheist topics, and we do tackle freedom of religion. And
it's hard to talk about law these days without getting into freedom of religion, quote unquote, arguments. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's gone, by the way. I mean, it's been as a result of us bungling or, you know, the easiest electoral questions in the world for the past, I don't know, 8 years, probably roughly. Yeah. It's gone. Like we've ruined, you know, the Constitution is ruined in terms of separation of church and state. It's just absolutely obliterated.
I'm going to cross that question off my list. I know. Yeah.
Yeah. God. Okay. Sorry. I've talked at length.
No,
kind of the origin story.
Let me ask you one thing I always enjoy about your different shows, Serious Inquiries Only. You always do so much research. As I said in the intro, I enjoy listening to it because unlike a lot of other typical atheist podcasts that are out there, I feel like I've heard a lot of what those people are saying. I'm not denigrating that at all, but I always feel like I'm learning something from your shows because it's so research heavy. And it's great in that sense. I really appreciate it. But one thing that I really wanted to talk to you about, because I know you have thoughts on this. I don't know if you knew this. This past week, or maybe a couple weeks ago, it was the 10th anniversary of the 2012 Reason Rally in D.C. Yeah. So like the largest single gathering of the atheist movement.
Was that the last one before it went to shit? Or because I remember
there was one in 2016. That included, you know, the champions of reason like Dave Rubin and people like that.
Well, okay. Was this the one? Maybe I'm getting my things crossed, but wasn't this the one where they tried to have like Johnny Depp or something and the whole thing
imploded?
That was
2016 and that imploded.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So terrible. He didn't show up, but I know. Somehow they could have found a way to make it look even worse in hindsight. But if you're going back to 2012, I mean, here's the question. I was involved with groups at that time. I've heard almost entirely positive things about that 2012 event from the people who attended it. It was kind of like a high point of the new atheism surge that was happening in the years prior. But I guess the question I wanted to ask you is, if it's been long enough after all those new atheist books came out, the ones you said were influential for you too. Are we better off as a result of that new atheism movement? Are things better off for atheists now than they were in the mid 2000s, 2010, 2012, times like that? Or in what ways?
Because that's complicated a broad question. No, that's a fantastic question. There's lots of ways to look at that. And I think that there are very important ways in which we're worse off because of it. And I hate to say that because I loved it. I mean, I want, you know, that fucking video, the Four Horsemen Talk, the original one where they're just chatting in a room. I watched that shit 100 times. I love that. I loved the Four Horsemen to death. They were the best. They're so interesting. And it pains me how much to the opposite of that I feel now. Like, it's just, it's disturbing. I'll tell you why we're worse off. And this is not just like trying to be rhetorically, you know, whatever. Like, this is real. Like, we are worse off because the more I think about that movement and how it was so big and why, you know, a lot of us, I think a lot of people in atheism for many different reasons are asking, like, what happened? Where did it all go? You know? And especially, you know, now it's like with COVID and everything. I mean, organizing in general has just been decimated and it's really tough. But like in 2016, 2017, like around then, it's like, what happened? We used to have these cons, you know, they're really big. There's still a few. I don't want to shortchange. Yeah. There's still a few really good conventions. For example, whenever COVID allows us to go to QED, that is just my absolute favorite. I love that conference. I'm going to be at AACon. I'm not sure if you're going to be there, but I'm
the American Atheist one. Yeah. I won't be there, but it's run by fantastic people. Yeah. They have,
I mean, now
a wide variety of speakers. Yeah.
Now they got rid of David Silverman. it is run by fantastic people. So still a lot of good stuff. I do not want to shortchange like the great stuff going on, but there's no denying. And any organizer will tell you this too. There's no denying that there's just this massive drop off. And a lot of us have just wondered why. And I, you know, it's the star power of the Four Horsemen is definitely a thing. But like, why? Why did they have such an ability to draw crowds that we didn't? And I can't help but think that in retrospect, a lot of it was rooted in Islamophobia. And like, I think I was in denial of it at the time. But I think that's why you had so much appeal, because a lot of people getting that extra energy of like wanting to go to events, wanting to whatever is the appeal of these arguments against Islam that, frankly, in retrospect, like it was just an incredibly, I think, honestly, a bigoted way of looking at the world of hyper-focusing on the dangers of one particular religion when, you know, Christianity in this country it has been far more harmful in terms of what we've done, you know, what it's created, the foreign policy that it's led to, the leaders it's installed in our government, you know, all that. And, I can't help but think that's a major chunk of it. Not all of it. You know, obviously they're also just entertaining speakers and they had that sort of star power that led to a lot of people coming out. But so back to the question though, I think that there's some ways that I'm sure a lot of people individually are better off. You know, it's easy for me to forget living in California, how much religion still really is a terrible impact on people's lives in this country, especially in the South. Where I hear from a lot, you know, because it's hard just as a human to always remember different places you've been at in your story. You know, like when some people you do the deconversion or you do the thing, you get into it, and then you kind of maybe you outgrow the enthusiasm for atheism. But like a lot of people are still very much in that place where they're forced to go to a church that doesn't accept them. Just all kinds of crap, you know, that happens, and they still need us, and they still need, you know, those arguments, they still need that community. And it's easy for me to kind of lose track of that in California, where it's, you know, for the most part, pretty, you know, not, although I say that California has the most Trump supporters of any state because it's huge. And people forget that as well. But anyway, the point is, individually, I think it's helped a lot of people, but as a movement, I think all in all, not only was it a force for bad, it was literally an undermining force of its own goals. And I mean that
undermined what?
Its own goals. Because what it led to was, if one of the main goals of the atheism movement, of the new atheism movement, was reducing the influence of religion in our country, protecting that separation of church and state, those sorts of things. If you take that as one of the stated goals, it ultimately did more to undermine that than to help it, because it gave the movement created this, is a massive topic to talk about, but this white identity politics and this white male specifically, the space to kind of, it's not everybody, but it really energized a lot of those dynamics of things that angry white dudes care about, you know, and what that led to. If you take Dave Rubin as like a microcosm, you know, if you want to say Dave Rubin was, he was never like an atheist leader. People overblow that, but he was, you know, somewhat influential in atheism early on in his show. And
for those who don't know him, can you briefly describe who he is?
He's a horrible YouTuber that pretended to be a liberal, even though he wasn't for the longest. He did this like long con of like, I'm a pretend liberal, you know, but
I'm
but
a
actually
liberal.
Exactly. And like the liberals have lost me. He did this like, and it was absolutely,
which Bill Maher has done, which a lot of people have taken Bill that Maher. Same route, which is no, I'm still a liberal. It's all of you who have gone crazy to the left. Meanwhile, Ruben specifically gets used by like PragerU to promote their ideas. He runs in conservative circles now.
He was funded by the PayPal. Who's that guy? The PayPal guy.
Peter Thiel.
Yes, he was funded by Peter. Like it was a long con the whole way. Like there never was I was just a liberal and then I'm now a like it was a long con the whole way, in my opinion. It was so funny because there's this video that I don't know if you saw. There was so much going on in the world. It might've been a year or two ago where he finally did his like coming out as a conservative. Did you catch this one? He was
that
at an event.
Vaguely familiar.
Is that some event where there was obviously a fucking Republican bullshit event? Cause that's what he's been this whole time. And he does this reveal of like, well, I'm not afraid to call myself a conservative, you know, like this reveal, and nobody
waiting for applause.
Yeah. It was like the Simpsons where, you know, what's his name is discovered to be seeing the burlesque show nobody cares.
Grandpa.
Like, oh. Yeah.
Oh no, I think can't
it's Barney. Is that his name?
Oh, it might be. Okay.
There's something anyway. And they have, somebody has to react. I think it's the bartender has to react like, oh, that guy. Oh no. It's like that where nobody reacted. Nobody.
Because they all knew he was conservative.
Yeah, it was so obvious. And then he even, you could find this video. He even was like, that was supposed to be an applause. He did a jab.
Right.
Like, please clap.
Please clap.
Basically. Anyway, the way the movement undermined the goals is that's a microcosm of shifting focus from things that atheists should care about, which is, you know, in my opinion, like if you're going to be a movement, fighting against the impact of Christianity in this country, all that stuff I mentioned. And it took that and instead, it solely focused on being anti-Islam for a long time. Like that was a major focus of how bad Islam was around the world and how much the liberal, you know, order was like ignoring it. And then it sort of migrated into like, they're not even letting you criticize it.
Feminists in America have a problem with X, Y, and Z, but Muslim women in these other countries have it worse. So we'll ignore the problems you have over here.
Right.
Or at least they're not as important as this big priority over there.
Which, if anyone thinks you're like, you know, straw manning, that's literally the Richard Dawkins dear Muslima comment. Just search that if you're not versed in that. And then slowly over time, I realized what they did around 2000, probably 17-ish, 16, 17, is they shifted. And instead of Islam, that was the thing they would demagogue at all times. It just became anti-wokeness. And it was just the new, it's 100%. If you follow Sam Harris, all those other, like that community is 100% dedicated to anti-wokeness now. It's just nonstop. Oh, you're going
to, I want to get to there in a second. Let me add a couple thoughts on the Islamic thing. I think correct me if I'm wrong here. I feel like one of the things that happened is I feel like I was a part of that, not a leader in any sort of way, but I was into that too, where it's saying, here are the problems with the religion. And I can make the case for why I don't care what you think about drawing this image. I see it as a free speech issue. So fine.
Yeah.
I get wearing a hijab is, if it's not really a choice, then we should fight about that.
Yeah.
I understood the arguments for all that stuff. But I mean, if you're looking for people who really hate Muslims, you're going to find them on the right.
Exactly.
And so you get who's supporting that sort of cause. On one hand, you have the religious freedom side of things and the atheism side of things, which always struck me as a more liberal thing. But the more you get into it, who's cheering you on, who's leading the charge there, you have a lot of people on the right. So all of a sudden, when those really vocal people that you're talking about, if you're looking for support and allies, where are you finding them? You're finding a lot of like-minded people from conservative sides. That's one thing that came to mind now. Yeah. That's easier for me, just speaking for myself, to see now. And also, I think one of the things that I remember when I became an atheist is the thing that made me want to be activist-y about it, or at least talk about it in mm-hmm. some capacity, is the fact that for me, it was probably the one decision I made in my life, becoming an atheist, not believing in God, that no one else told me to do. No one influenced me to do it. I feel like I just figured that one out. And it felt really powerful to know that everyone is wrong and I am right about this thing that is so weighty. And being a contrarian about a thing that I feel everyone else is wrong about, it felt good and right, and it felt even better once I realized I wasn't the only one. And for, I think for so many people, being the contrarian is the thing that they want to do. That's what gives them enjoyment. And that when you're talking about the wokeness thing, when you're talking about the is anti-Muslim bigotry, which we do want to fight, but which veers into Islamophobia, so much of that is, I want to fight this because I want to debate you. That's the thing I want to do. I don't care what the issue is. Oh, we're talking about COVID mandates. I'm going to fight you on that, because debating stuff and being the, you know, lone voice that thinks they're right on this thing everyone else feels, that's the power I want to get back to. And I know personally for me, it's like, okay, you know what? Since I became an atheist, there really hasn't been a thing where I felt I was so right about it, and I could not find so many other voices of reason. Like, I don't lack, I could see where I don't have that same thrill, but also I'm not eagerly trying to be saying it. I'm not eagerly looking for a thing that everyone else is wrong about. I don't know where I'm going with this, but that contrarian nature, I think, has a lot of power for a lot of people.
It is that. And I agree with you that, like, the thing about atheism is it is an obvious thing that we're right about that a bunch of people are wrong about. And it's amazing. It's amazing, you know? And I think that one thing that can become a problem is if you start to think, as you say, like, there are a lot of things like that, which I don't know how many things there are. Like, atheism is, it's honestly, it's really clear. Like, the only reason people are religious is because they're indoctrinated into it. Like, very rarely does somebody go from atheism, you know, being raised atheist, to like latching onto a particular religion. It happens, but like, for the most part, you are the religion your parents were, like almost entirely deterministic in that way. Like, and it's because you have to be taught these things at an early age. And don't get me wrong, I have plenty of problems with the tenets of Islam and the, you know, the anti-feminist kind of all that stuff. This is not to say, like, is in no way an endorsement of that religion or any religion. It for me, it was entirely about the focus, and it's a bigger problem than you'd think. Like, I think even well-meaning people, including me and maybe including you, could feel like, okay, well, I'm not being like unfair in how I'm focusing on Islam, because look how bad these tenets are. Look how many people believe in this, and da da da. But in retrospect, you could even be telling the truth every time. Like, you could even take true examples of, like, here's a, you know, a stoning that happened, and here's a whatever. But if you cherry pick and hyper focus on the, you know, the flaws or the whatever, the visceral stories of trauma of one particular religion, it's going to give you a skewed view of the world, and it's going to activate things in your human brain. It's similar to how you said, where it's like, also the people who will want to be a part of that will turn out to be maybe not in it for good reasons.
That they're at. I don't know. We talked about this on our podcast a few weeks ago, but I don't know if you heard the Trojan Horse Affair podcast from the New York Times.
God, that, Serial. Oh, man.
But that covered exactly what you're talking. They had it was 8 episodes, and one of the episodes really focused on the humanist group, Humanist UK.
British humanists.
And
yeah.
If you listen to it, I mean, when I heard it, my thought was, I get what their complaints are about an Islamic school. And obviously, we're only hearing the bulk of the story from the side of a guy running that school and a reporter trying to defend what they were doing. But what the conflict that happened there is you have Muslim, you have the atheists saying, we're concerned about the extremist version of this. And these guys are saying, but that's not the thing we are talking about here. You're trying to lump us together. You're trying to do this and that. But that was the central conflict. And I could see that happening as they are talking, like, I know what the atheists are complaining about. And that's a different focus from the thing the whole story was about. But I want to go back to...
Can I say a word on that?
Yeah,
because I have been dying to talk about that podcast. I plan to do something on my show about the exact episode you're talking about. Because when they mention that, I'm listening to this show, just going along like, oh, this is super interesting. And then they say, and British humanists, I'm like, oh my God, what's this going to be? I was like,
how did our people get involved?
Almost like
in
someone
this.
Found an old photo of me or something. Yeah. And you're like, what is this going to be? Oh my God. What did I look like back then? And not that I was involved at all, but like the community that I was kind of a part of showed its ass in that moment. And it's a perfect example of the dynamic I'm talking about, or that I keep trying to get to, but sorry, I keep getting distracted.
No,
the biggest problem is with skeptics. One of the biggest problems is being convinced that their own emotional feelings are actually the one true skepticism science thing. Like that's the biggest flaw. And their biases, the people who think they are rational and know all these pitfalls and reasoning pitfalls are the ones who can be the most convinced that they're the unbiased ones and everybody else is biased or ideological or whatever. And there's this dedication to not being ideological, which makes no sense. And you saw it in that moment because listen to that podcast, the Trojan Horse Affair. The central document in that is a letter that any fucking human with a half a brain could see was fake. It's right. The most obviously fake document of all time. That was sent as like this alarm bells of like the Muslims are planning to use this school to like all this plot. And I would have hoped that people involved in Richard Dawkins's sponsored British humanist thing, where it's all about skepticism, the tools of reason, would have looked at that and been like, well, that's fucking stupid. Like, come on, this is the dumbest document I've ever seen. If it weren't so disturbing, it would be funny how badly faked this document is. Obviously a fake thing. And they fell for it, or their biases allowed them to say like, well, maybe it's, I don't know if it's real or not, but there's still a problem here. And
that is what their response basically was. They downplayed the letter as being significant and said, well we had legit concerns.
Well, in retrospect, but do you think they did that at the time? Because I don't think they did that at the time.
I don't, but you said you were listening to the podcast and they mentioned the British humanists and that was your inclination. Oh, we're somehow part of the story. Our people are part of the story. Yeah. I knew about the podcast, hadn't listened to it yet. And the first hint I knew that these two worlds were overlapping is that I got a press release from the Humanist UK group saying,
after that interview,
we want to correct the record because we feel like we were portrayed unfairly. It's like, oh, damn, the fact that this email is very long makes me think I should listen to this right away.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to, since you brought up the wokeness thing, this is a thing that I know you've talked about several times. Like, one is, did you see that coming, this battle for wokeness? And two, like, why does this seem to be this rightward, grievance-heavy shift of so many of those, like, old-school new atheists? Why has that been the thing that seems to have captivated them? Do they not realize that the right they're being used, whether they like it or not, to advance a right-wing agenda? Like, why is that the thing that captivated them so much?
It's like the great man theory of history versus the dynamics of history. It's hard to say. I think it's easy for anyone to say in retrospect they anticipated stuff. I, as a good skeptic, I like to try to be accurate and to the best I can about my feelings. Like, for example, I didn't think Trump would get elected in 2016. I'm proud to say I did not think we were that fucking stupid as a country, and we are. And it's easy to be like, oh, I knew it. I knew he'd win. Okay. Did you were the one of the one person, anyway. And so for that reason, I don't think I foresaw this, and I certainly didn't foresee it in 2010, 2011, 2012. Like, but I will say that I caught on a little earlier than a lot of people because of Dave Rubin's bullshit, actually, because he was so transparently, in my opinion, transparently just, first of all, vacuous. Like, he had nothing to say, and people were because he had Sam Harris on, we're kind of like on to him as the next cool thing in atheism, and he's completely vacuous. But also because he kept over and over using the regressive left. Remember, that's what it used to be before. They go through these terms until they find something that sticks. The regressive left was for, I don't know, how long was that? Like a year?
That was all they focused on,
that term, the regressive left. And that was like, I think a lot of people didn't catch on at that point and should have. Many did. But like, that was when I caught on, I think, to how much this was just a focus. It's just the most basic, unskeptical thing to do in arguing is nutpicking. You know, like, it's a great term. It's where you just find the worst argument on the other side or the worst example of somebody on the other side, and you blow that out of proportion and use it to represent their whole side. And that is,
so here's one quote unquote crazy feminist, therefore feminism is stupid. Here's one school or one group at one college saying these are our demands, therefore all black people are making all these demands of society.
Right. And it's that led to, and ultimately to cap off what I've been saying, that fixation on the now woke, is it what's name? That's the branding that stuck, being anti-woke, that has led to ultimately a Supreme Court that is 6-3 conservative over Democrat. Like,
will still be 6-3.
And they are making decisions. They're writing decisions that are absurd, that are laughable, that just shred the Constitution and take away any semblance of separation of church and state. And yet the major atheist voices that you know are no longer, by the way, that's another sign of it. They're not even involved in atheism. Sam Harris hasn't done an atheist related thing in, I don't know, 10 years. Like,
his podcast is not about atheism anymore.
No. And even if he would touch on atheism, he doesn't do anything atheist. He's still looked at as like, oh, this atheist leader. He has almost nothing to do with atheism for at least 8 years, I think.
For what it's worth, even when The End of Faith came out, even in the speeches he made at that time, he very much made it clear, I'm not here to be an atheist leader. I don't even like the word. We shouldn't need the word. I only say that to say the media made him out to be this new atheist leader because they like I mean,
he participated in a lot of debates that were an atheist debates a Christian, which is a thing that an atheist leader would do. I agree with you. And I was going to bring that up too. Like, he did have that, like, oh, I hate the term, we shouldn't need it. And, you know, he acted as though he was involved in trying to spread the gospel of atheism. No, I don't want to use that word. To spread those arguments. You know, and even if you say like, oh, I don't like the term, I don't want to be a leader, whatever. If you're out there debating Christians, and I used to love those debates, you know, like I thought he was a great debater, you know, in terms of getting on there and debating Christians or other religions and fighting for atheists arguments in that way. And he stopped doing that and hasn't done anything close to that in a very long time. And one thing that does suck is that he still gets referred to as like a leader of atheism now, which he absolutely was, but now he is not a leader of atheism in any way. Mm-hmm. He's just not. He has a podcast that's like an inch to the left of Joe Rogan's audience, maybe. And that's what he is. He's just an influencer of a bunch of people kind of like Joe Rogan fans, like maybe slightly better than Joe Rogan fans, but not much, because there's plenty of, they go on each other's shit. You know, like he went on Joe Rogan, he works with him.
The cross promotion among that crowd.
Yeah.
The classical liberal crowd, the grievance crowd is incredible.
And
who are, yeah.
No, yeah.
I'm kind of wondering, okay, Sam Harris, whatever. I'm wondering, who do you see as the people who carry the most influence, who would still call themselves atheists, whether or not they want to say they're a leader or something? Like, who scares you? And I don't know if that's the right terminology either. Who carries the most influence among that anti-woke, yeah, I'm an atheist, yeah, I hate the regressive left sort of crowd at this point?
I'm trying to parse your question. Do you mean who's still like within atheism, like, but also
Yeah, I mean, I guess I know it's not a clear question here. Like, Sam Harris, you're right, never really was the head of anything, but obviously attracted a sizable atheist audience in his day.
And I want to be clear, he was an atheist leader. Like, I want to be very clear. Like, he was part of why I was into atheism. He was one of the four horse people, but just isn't now, is my point.
I feel like in his wake, in that wake of the those people, you also have like the Boghossians, the Lindsays,
nothing.
That crowd of people who played on the atheism thing for a while, saying, yes, we can also become these in-your-face atheists, and have since shifted to saying, here's why all of academia is too liberal and all of that. I feel like that's kind of the worst of it, maybe.
Yeah, there isn't the thing about Boghossian and Lindsay is they really weren't very popular as atheists. They were never like leaders of a movement. They were people who latched on to coattails, wrote some books that didn't sell any copies, and, you know, whatever. They probably went to a few events or something. But like, honestly, those were people I could get on my shitty little podcast in 2014. Like, I know as an as somebody who had an atheist podcast, who tried to book atheist people in 20, you know, starting in whatever, like it was 2014 or around that time, I know who was somebody who was tough to get to and who wasn't. And the reason that I had James Lindsay on my show back then is he was a nobody who had like a little bit of a Twitter following, wrote a book that almost nobody read on atheism. But he had some interesting thought along those lines, but
do you think
I just wanted to finish that thought. They are not atheist leaders who moved their people to anti-wokeness or use their atheist fame to do that. In my opinion, they are people who barely hacked it as anything atheist, who made their names as anti-woke crusaders.
They found an audience when they started pushing for that stuff.
Yes. They became any sort of notable people purely on the backs of hating the woke and cherry picking, you know, nut picking those arguments all over and over.
There's always an audience to be found when you're very confident in your ignorance. And they definitely have taken that ride. Do you think this is just part of a growing movement, and this happens all across the line? Like, if you go back 15, 20 years ago, there was a push for getting people to just be comfortable with atheism, where it was fighting for the idea of church-state separation and less religious influence. And maybe it was a little easier to unite under that umbrella. And now, for better or for worse, like, while there are exceptions, depending on where you live and things like that, there are plenty of resources out there for people who might be questioning their faith, who might be looking for some kind of community if they are new to atheism, which I know you and I don't need those resources. We're pretty comfortable with all that stuff. But like you said, there are plenty of people who are new to it. They need those resources too, but they're out there. So that stuff is there for them. So the question is, like, you know, we're a bigger movement in a very loose sense. So of course you're going to have these weird schisms that go all over the place. One of the arguments that I've heard from those ostensibly right-wing atheist groups and activists is, remember the good old days when we were all united for a single cause? Yeah. We want to go back to that. It's like, first of all, I have nothing in common with, or very little in common with you anymore. But I feel like that happens when any new movement that really took on something, when it grows and it becomes big, it's like, atheism is not the thing I care about anymore. Of course, I write about it and talk about it and all that stuff. But if someone's watching or listening, I genuinely don't care if they agree with me or not. I'm not here collecting tally marks of atheists. If someone's a progressive Christian and we share values, I probably have a ton more in common with that person. So the thing that I've seen is a lot of the people who are interested and active in like organized atheism no longer do it, but they've used that passion to move on to other causes, whether it's reproductive rights or LGBTQ rights or things like that. They've taken that activism inspiration and they're using it to fight against religious, Christian nationalism in other ways. And then you have like the people who still cling to, no, atheism is the thing that matters to me. Those seem to be, outside of the handful of like American atheist type of groups these days, those people who still cling to that, the good old days of 2004 and 2006 or whatever, they're the ones that seem to have shifted to the right.
Yeah. There's a lot there. I think one unfortunate thing that happened, and you touched on this your bit on the contrarianism. One other thing that a lot of people who build themselves and like to think of themselves as rational, as skeptics, as whatever, is that they have this tendency towards centrism, because centrism is the easiest way to feel like you're smarter than the most people. If you're out there saying, I'm not influenced by the Fox News or MSNBC, I'm not, it just makes you feel like this super independent thinker, and they have an allergy to anything that's too one party, you know. And the really unfortunate thing that happened is almost the entirety of any issues that an atheist should care about became completely linked up with Democratic Party politics, because the biggest threat to all of that is Republicans. The biggest threat to abortion rights, something that I think atheists should care about, because the almost the entirety of the arguments against abortion rights are religious, even though you find a handful of people here and there that are atheists. Mm-hmm. But like, for the most part, that's because of the Christian movement in our country.
Right. Anti-gay marriage. We saw it.
Anti-gay marriage.
Who's against
back as well. Oh. That will be back.
We're back to interracial marriage already, too. Yeah, those are all religious arguments used against it primarily. I'm actually shocked is the wrong word, but I'm surprised that so many people who are against trans rights, I mean, I know religious people have long been, conservative religious people have long been fighting against that sort of thing. I'm kind of amazed by the power that secular arguments against trans rights have taken hold of so many people, because it used to be so easy to.
What's the name? I'm just wondering.
One example being like, we can't have trans women in women's sports. The arguments that people use to make that claim are not usually religious ones.
Gotcha.
They are I'm talking about fairness in sports and testosterone levels and things like those are stupid arguments. I'm saying those are not religious arguments.
Totally.
Whereas
no, you're right.
If we were going back a few years to fight against people fighting against gay marriage, it was really hard, relatively speaking, to come up with secular reasons to deny that. Really easy to come up with religious arguments to deny that. So I'm actually like, one of the things that is weird in this anti-trans world we're living in right now is how many secular arguments have been used to push that sort of thing. And a reason it's been so easy for me to see so many atheists, those old school atheists, latch on to the same arguments, because it's not just religious in nature. And religious conservatives love that.
Well, because their religion now, those people, their religion is anti-wokeness. That is their religion. And nothing plays into their religion better than the idea that, for example, this, it's so unfortunate that we have to spend so much time arguing about this, because it is a very deliberate ploy by people on the right. The right, what they have done in the last, well, probably forever, but particularly in my adult life that I've witnessed it in the past 10 years or whatever, they have entirely weaponized culture war issues as a way to distract from the fact that the very powerful among them want to not pay any taxes and do a bunch of bullshit and get away with murder in terms of, you know, and just stay in power and government. They don't have any issues anymore. All they have is this anti-wokeness and these cultural war issues.
As in, like, the Republicans don't even have a platform anymore.
No, exactly. Exactly. All they have is, if you ever try to talk to a Trump supporter, they just have weird things that they think liberals did. They're just grievances. This list of obscure grievances is this entire just I don't know what the word is for it, this atmosphere, this whole like a fake world of grievances against the woke, or that the woke have perpetrated against them. And the trans stuff plays into that because in order to believe that the Leah Thomas thing is like grossly unfair, you have to believe that the NCAA, an organization that is their job is the sport. Like it's a major thing. It's the fucking NCAA. I don't even know how to say it. Like that's their whole reason for being, would have just not thought about the issue, or just because of wokeness been like, yeah, okay, whatever. They say they're female so they can swim right now. Like there's like these extensive rules. Every argument against Leah Thomas is based in just fake news. It's all fake. Like it's all numbers that somebody pulled out of their ass. Did you know that when she was swimming as a male, she was 460 foot, made up number. That meme you see is a made up number. None of that is true. It's all based on this fake information atmosphere they have, this ecosystem rather, that's just like, it's entirely self-reinforcing now, because every example, if you debunk one of them, it doesn't matter. They have 18 other things that were also fake at the time, but that in their mind went down as real. Totally fake crap. Trans women in sports is a big one. Almost every story on that is fake or misleading in some way. And people, I guess because...
Why is it so easy to fool so many atheists into thinking those are legit arguments?
Because it plays into their religion of anti-wokeness. In my opinion, that's their bias. The places where people, otherwise smart people, because a lot of these atheists are perfectly intelligent people, but the places where any human gets into trouble is where they have a blind spot for, you know, arguments that appeal to their preconceived notions, you know? And this happens perfectly to everybody, where it's like, you shared something that was, from a leftist page, for example, progressive page, and you shared it because it seemed like it was true because, you know, maybe Trump did that whatever thing or somebody did the thing. And sometimes those are fake. Now, largely speaking, those are true because Trump is horrible. But like a lot of those were
mistaken. I've seen that sometimes, though. Yeah, sure. And like
I've gotten caught sharing something. Too. Yeah. You those are the people that you question the least. As humans, we just do that. We question our in-group the least. We like if somebody that's in our in-group that we think is right about, you know, largely these questions, if they say something, we're going to pretty much take it at face value. And that's what's happened, because this entire anti-woke movement just has a million of those examples that they haven't questioned. And once you do that over a period of years, you're willing to believe anything for them, like really extreme things that are just not true, because they play into those biases. I mean, I come from a Fox News family, and it has been depressing to say the least to see what they are capable of believing now. You know, like back in, you know, it's always been bad, obviously, but like at least it was somewhat, you know, more based in reality than it is now. The things that they are able to believe about world events, about vaccines, about COVID, it's unbelievable. And it doesn't come from one story. It's not as though they see one thing on Fox News and they're like, oh, well, that's, I guess I'm, it comes from a lifetime in some cases, or multiple decades or years of being fed this misinformation and not questioning it. And then over time, you have more evidence in your mind that, you know, COVID is fake and all, and the anti or the woke are perpetrating this COVID hoax for God knows why. I don't know why, just some mysterious mustache twirling reasons.
Let's bring this full circle. Like one of the things that got both of us interested in this world of activism, atheism, what have you, is we felt we were right about this very consequential thought, this belief about God. And we all had our own ways of trying to convince people who really had strongly held beliefs about God. And we wanted to be like, but you're wrong. And I want to persuade you that I'm right about this. I want you to jump ship and hopefully I can find a way to persuade you. And one reason I think, like you said, those new atheists back in the day, even though we were atheists, they found a way to persuade a lot of people using whatever manner they had, whether it was kind of in your face Hitchens or Daniel Dennett was more philosophical about it or whatever, they found a way to convince a lot of people. So a lot of the stuff you're saying about the wokeness, anti-wokeness stuff, it's a lot of that, which is I cling to these beliefs. It turns out they're wrong, but I'm stuck to them. I got to keep pushing it. This is all I have now. How do you convince those people, ostensibly skeptics, critical thinkers in their mind, how do you convince those people who are so dead set on feminism is wrong, Islam is the worst, I'm going to ignore the Christian problem over here? It's like, how do you get them to open their eyes? They've done it before. They did it at least once in the past. Like,
that's actually a really good point.
It should be possible. But now we got to do all that stuff we did to religious people in the past. Now we got to do it to our own people. And yeah. It's like, how the hell
I think
do
about
you have
this
any
every
way
day.
To do that?
No, of course not. Because if I did, we wouldn't be living in the shit world we're living in right now. Like, I've never thought of it in quite those terms. You're totally right. That's a very insightful thing to say. Like, it has been done before. If you're talking about focusing on just the atheist component, not like broader right-wing movements, but the atheists, at least, that are now kind of right-wing anti-woke warriors, you're right. I mean, they were convinced possibly of religion and then were deconverted. I do nothing these days but try to think of ways that we could do that. And I'm at a loss. I have ideas, but I think for the most part, short of somebody writing an amazing book, but the problem is like, it's so much, it's
as
so much harder
anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's an equivalent thing. It's just so much harder to make these uphill, it's a gish gallop. Most of that is a gish gallop where they
how do you pierce the echo chamber?
So many examples of fake shit or overblown shit or unreasonably focused on stuff that they think the woke believes or has done. And there's so much of it that it takes infinite more energy to debunk every single one of those things to a person that, by the way, is probably not even listening to you.
Yeah. One thing you did that I really appreciated, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a while. Like, was it last year when the Boghossian crowd did their grievance studies hoax where they submitted these fake papers to a bunch of journals?
That's been like 3 years, and I think.
It was 3 years. Okay. So one of the things I think you did this where you went through the article that they wrote up or something, or you went through the papers that they were claiming were these examples of academia run wild. And you literally said, okay, this is a paper that they cite as having no value to the world of academics, but it definitely fulfills, like, you're using all the liberal buzzwords. And you actually went through those papers and said, this is what they're saying. This is what they discovered. This is actually insightful in a way, even if the headline was easy to mock. But, like, you kind of went through that stuff. And that is a very different, I thought that's a really helpful, persuasive way to go about it, because it's not like you brought on someone who was making those arguments and debated them, which I feel like we would have done.
No, I did. So that was actually, I did have James Lindsay on for that episode. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay.
So it was, well, because back then was right around the time I corresponded with James Lindsay. I had him on the show to talk about certain issues and I disagreed with him, but he wasn't an insane person like he is now. He was, he was somebody who, I was trying to like reach him from the kind of the other side of the social justice stuff. You know, like I thought I thought he was reachable. And who knows if he was, in retrospect, I doubt it, but maybe, I don't know. People snowball quickly. He seemed reachable at the time. And I was a little bit, over to the left of that in the social justice issues. And I tried to reach him and more that spread grew. And it got to the point where, I remember I got an email. It's the weirdest thing. One of the last emails exchanges we had, he said, like, I'm done with this social justice shit. Like, as in, like, he's tired of focusing on being anti-social justice. And then, like, a month or so later, maybe the timeline's wrong, but some months later, the conceptual penis hoax thing happened. It was never again did he talk about a single other thing than anti-wokeness. And the example you're bringing up was, when that came out, I did several episodes, but Eli Bosnick came on the show to really just like debate him hard, or I think we did a breakdown. That might've been what it was. I think James at that point refused to come on and debate that because
so the reason I bring bullshit. It up,
let me finish what the example actually was real quick.
Yeah.
We did a debunking and then I think he came on after that to try to have his say. And when he sent me an email after the fact, I was like, cause he made a bunch of claims about like, oh, did you hear they're doing this at this university? Did you hear this paper said this? And I was like, hey, as I do every show, shoot me the sources so I can post the fucking sources in the show notes. And he sends me an email that is just links from a Twitter account that they all worshipped called
seen that Twitter handle.
Yeah, it was basically the focus of it was people's dissertations, you know, like and like how they're so stupid and woke and whatever. And all it would do is make a completely distorted, catchy description of it and then tweet the link of the paper, which obviously nobody would read. And so people over time just came to believe that that everybody in academia was writing these stupid papers on God knows what because of this totally misleading thing. So I followed up on every link he sent me, looked at what the papers were, and most That's of right. them were just like, well, yeah, this person wrote a reflective paper to finish their fucking degree and whatever. You know, like it wasn't what they took it to be, which was, did you know woke scientists believe that such and such such, and they think that this, it's like, no, one graduate student wrote an essay that nobody read except their thesis advisor about their personal experience. And also it wasn't just that, like there are actually some really good ones too that were legitimately interesting and would be good material for future experiments or future insights. And they collapsed all that into these ridiculous anti-woke headlines that was the end. That exchange was the end of any relationship with James Lindsay. It's been at least 3 years, I think. It may be more, actually. I can't remember. And when I published his links and talked about them, he threatened to sue me for violating his copyright, which his I copyright. Asked Andrew Torres, aforementioned yeah. brilliant lawyer. I was like, is this anything? He's like, that's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever read in my life. He's worse at the law than he is at, fucking his anti-woke bullshit. So yeah, source of that story.
That's right. I mean, the thing I like about it is just saying, instead of necessarily just talking to him, you're just like, look, I'm going to lay out the facts for you because you're getting misinformation. Whoever is listening, whoever might be interested in going in depth on this stuff, I'm going to lay it all out for you and try to give you the actual story behind what's happening. And I wonder if that might be more persuasive than the shouting matches that we're so used to in other places in terms of trying to persuade people who might be persuadable but aren't getting good information, which is just, look, here's the thing that you keep hearing about. I'm just going to lay it out for you. I tend to like those podcasts and videos the most where it's just like, we're not going to get into the crazy shit they say. We're just going to tell you what's happening. Here's where we're getting our information from. Here's the actual story behind it, and take it or leave it, because we're not going to throw it in your face. But for those of you interested in the actual material, here you go.
That's the conclusion I came to, but I got overwhelmed and just totally, it was too much. You know what I mean? Like it felt, I think that is the way to do it. And that is what I've tried to do at different points. And I've, you know, had ideas to do more projects along those lines, which is take whatever the thing, the right or the anti-woke crowd is making into the viral thing of the moment. And they do this every day. There's a new thing. The students here shouted the blah and just, try to put out the correct information in a way that would show up on the Google search, you know, because that's the other thing is like, there are many of these issues where if you search them, if you hear about something, you're like, what was this? You search them. Every single top result is Ben Shapiro talking about this, you know, other, and they flood the zone with the misinformation. And, you know, like that has been how I want to do it. I ran out of personal steam. Like it's so overwhelming because It never feels like you accomplish anything. It always feels like you take one step forward and 900 steps back. And I got, you know, like I honestly kind of ran out of steam on that. And I still do it here and there. And I want to give a huge shout out to my co-host, Lindsay Osterman on Serious Inquiries Only, who we've done a lot of really good work. And I say she has done a lot of really good work in putting research into some of these issues, because maybe to bring it full circle here, the most depressing thing about all of this is the rational bros, the skeptic manosphere, that whole people, they are convinced, they are 100% convinced that they are on the side of science and that a bunch of woke activists have to ignore science in order to make their claims about anything, about race, about gender, about whatever. And they are 100% the opposite of right. Every single issue, and this is why I have a scientist, Dr. Lindsay Osterman, psychologist, do the actual research to show that, oh no, you know what? Actually, more the progressive line, not that everything every, you know, SJW ever said was correct. I don't believe that at all. Like, there's plenty of people who are wrong on my side as well. But largely, the science of these issues supports the progressive position on these issues. The science supports treating trans children in a certain way. Like, she did a whole episode. I want to bring this up as an example. We did an episode of Serious Inquiries Only. Forgive me. Would you mind if I just search the title real quick?
Absolutely. While you're looking for that title, but I mean, this is the point I want to make, which is I feel even when I make videos these days, sometimes I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything anymore. I'm just going to try to explain the backstory of this thing and just lay the information out there. And if I can hopefully get the title right, and maybe you stumble upon it in a search, more power to you. I mean, the most popular video I've had on YouTube in several years is literally going through every killing in the Bible, using a reference from Steve Wells, who wrote Skeptic's Annotated Bible, but just saying, like, look, here's every God-sanctioned killing. I'm not offering much opinion on any of that. I'm just laying out every story for you. It's like a two-hour video, and here you go. And now I'm going to leave. You can discuss this amongst yourselves. But the idea of, I'm not making a case that, you know, here's why religion is bad. Here's the thing. Nope. I'm just going to lay it out for you. And if you're looking for this information, I hope you find it. I feel like a lot of times with your podcast, that's what I like about it. It's, you're not necessarily, to me, going after people who disagree with you, but you're saying, look, here's the thing that's troublesome. Let's look at it in depth, because no one else seems to be doing that. And hopefully people who care about this thing will listen to it. And I feel like that's an effective way to do it, because it's really hard to capture people's attention otherwise.
Perhaps. I guess that's more of a, what's the dichotomy there? Is the other thing you're looking at, like, you know, trying to debate or trying to, like, what's the alternative? Yeah.
There are definitely people who want to debate it. There's definitely you're wrong, and I'm just going to give you a short video that explains why you're stupid. That vibe, that general sense of videos and stuff that are just shortened in your face. And sometimes the best ones are, this isn't flashy, but I'm just going to lay it out there. And sometimes it's the equivalent of reading a longer book that goes in depth about a topic than the short article that just kind of covers the bullet points.
I know, but it's just so discouraging, you know, like, for example, the one I wanted to shout out was episode 284 and 285. Did you hear about Dr. Deborah So wrote The End of Gender, Debunking Myths About Sex and Identity in Our Society, which was entirely just bullshit lies. And Lindsay went through the science of all this. And these folks on the anti-woke side are convinced that the opposite thing is happening, that I'm just emotionally being like, I really, you know, think trans people are fine, so I'm going to lie about the science to da, da, da. It's exactly the opposite. Like, you go through the science and the, you know, like one of the links on the show notes I'm just looking at, like, she went through the review, like a science review of the current best practices in care of transgender youth. And it perfectly, you know, backed up the claims that Deborah So was fighting against, you know, like it's precisely the opposite of true. The like, when it comes to trans people, when it comes to race, and a lot of issues around systemic bias and systemic racism. The science backs up largely the progressive stance on that. Not, you know, obviously not, I can't endorse every person that's on the progressive side, but largely speaking, the science backs up the fact that there's systemic racism in our country. The science backs up that gender is very complicated, and it's actually not as simple as, oh, you're born one sex or the other, it's biological. No, it's actually not that simple. And we went through, she went through on that episode, all kinds of different ways that gender is complicated. Even like setting aside trans people, like just there are lots of ways that people can be born that are very fascinating. And it's more scientific minded. It's more skeptic minded. It's more open-minded to learn about that and apply the best science rather than emotionally starting from what I want to believe and going from there.
And you would think the people who found a way to who pushed that exact viewpoint when it came to religion, they're so bad at doing it when it comes to gender and identity and cancel culture in big quote marks and all of that. It's like, wow, you guys are really swayed by bad anecdotes. I wonder if we've heard that one before.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, honestly, the response from most of the skeptic community to that Twitter account, real peer review. That's what it was. Peer review. I just remembered. I think maybe that one got banned and they started like real peer review one or two or something. But anyway, the response from our community was gulp that shit down and ask for more. That was the response. Oh, can you see what the woke left is doing now? And the response of what I think a true skeptic would be like, here, let me research that link. Let me read that paper. Let me at least read the fucking synopsis. What is you call the first part of the
abstract or abstract, whatever? Yeah.
Let me at least read the abstract. You know, like nope. They just gulp it down and would love another. That was a lot of that. It's so disappointing because they aren't any more rational or scientifically minded, I guess, than the religious people they always criticized.
And this is why I don't think
you're one really easy issue correct.
Right. This is why I don't think the Reason Rally or anything like it would happen again, because who the hell would you invite? Who would you invite to another one of those? Because a lot of the old people do not represent reason in any meaningful way. And I don't think you would find anyone who has universal praise either, even by a majority of people. But I mean, I'll close on this point. We can wrap it up, which is that even though so many of those atheists seem to be on this right wing anti-woke thing and they hate the description that, oh, you're right wing or whatever. And yet, if you look at any study that looks at non-religious people, atheists specifically, politically, on these issues, we're overwhelmingly liberal and progressive.
Absolutely.
These issues. I hope it stays that way. And it's just a case of the loudest voices that represent a minority of people getting heard, because it's not shifting the demographic, it seems. They're just appealing to the right-wing audience that they want. I don't know if that changes. I'd be worried if that changes, but I haven't seen any reason to think
Atheists are the most liberal. If you divide any religious grouping, atheists are the most. I think Jewish people are close in terms of the being lefty. If you look at the like Pew surveys and stuff, but no, that was a really interesting process I went through, because after the horrible bullshit MythCon thing that happened, I won't get into. I did take this feeling of like, well, fuck the entire movement. They're all right wing pieces of shit. And then, you know, like I did some research again, like, and it's not true. You know, like atheists actually on the whole, by the numbers, looking at the data, are incredibly liberal in their views. I don't know that that means they vote. Actually, no, I don't. I shouldn't say that. They also voted for Hillary and Biden in the strongest number. So, as you say, it's either like a silent majority thing. It's some combination of these things. It's either a silent majority thing. It's either the most online ones are the ones you hear from, and they tend to be young, angry white men. Not always, but like that tends to be the overwhelming force of these like manosphere skeptic people. And so you get the impression that like, well, all these atheists must be just right wing activists. And it's like, no, actually not. It's just you hear from those ones a lot. And also the third component, one final thing that I think is those audience are not atheists. I think a lot of them latch onto it because of the reactionary views and just kind of don't really care about the atheist part of it. And yeah, especially now that almost every one of those people, like Sam Harris and others, don't do anything about atheism anymore. They're just right wingers rather than atheists first who came to this, you know, via those means.
I know you don't want to, it's opening a can of worms to talk about the MythCon thing. The funny thing about that, you did a debate at one of their conferences with a right wing reactionary type. I think I was also speaking at that event, maybe the year or two before you, when it was totally a normal, not right wing, not reactionary thing. And I'm like, the hell happened the year after I left? And then with you, I think they actually had some decent attempts at a debate, maybe. I mean, the fact that you were there representing
now they just went full on.
Yeah.
That's a great example to talk about. The year before, what happened is it's a very tawdry, like, interpersonal stuff. What happened was the group got kind of taken over by, it was like half, you know, shitbag right wing people and half actually really cool people. And there was almost like a coup. Like
this is a skeptics group in like Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
In Milwaukee, yeah. It's a skeptics group, and they the assholes won and the cool people left. And so the year before I was there, maybe you were there like the year before that one. I don't think you were there the year I was there. The year before I was there and I gave a Bible talk. It was a fantastic conference. It was super fun. It was awesome. And that's why I was like, when they asked me to come back the next year, I was like, absolutely. That was a great conference. Super cool people. Great debate. And then they just lost it. And now this is the peak of comedy. That group, which is Mythicist Milwaukee, their name was something that I don't think even atheists should support, which is Jesus mythicism. The idea that Jesus wasn't real. I mean, it's an interesting issue to look at, but like ultimately it's a minority position among historians and all that. And I'm not going to hold a minority position unless I were a historian and an expert in that field, without good reason. So anyway, that was what their name was based on. And they were based in Milwaukee, and Mythicist Milwaukee is now putting on an event full of Christians in Texas. That's now what they're doing. And it just goes to show how much it's not about, they aren't atheists. They don't give a shit about that anymore. They're not atheists who do right-wing stuff. They are right-wing people who at one time were involved in atheism, and they don't do it anymore. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. The lineup at their conferences is always a, you people see what you're doing here? Do you? Do you know who you invited?
They're just trolls. It's a joke. Yeah.
Listen, thank you. It's always fun talking to you. It's always fun listening to you. And I always appreciate the work you do, Thomas. Is there,
oh, my pleasure,
for people who might want to know more or support the stuff you're doing, where can they go?
Absolutely. Opening arguments. And again, it's unfortunate, though, but if you are an atheist, if you are someone who cares about atheist values, the best thing you can do right now is support the Democratic Party, or at the very least, fight against Republicans in office. And nobody wants to be in that position, but that's another reason why atheism as a movement is a little bit dead, because there's not really much for just atheists to do. The main battles are along political lines now. And if you wanted to like put energy into an atheist cause, well, you have to go be a Democrat. Like, you have to go organize Democrats.
Let me tweak that for you for a second.
Sure.
If you care about atheism, then the thing that I would hope motivates just about everyone who thinks that label is meaningful to them is fighting against Christian influence in the government and culture. And only one party is doing that and has the ability to make that change happen. It's not that all atheists have to be Democrats. It's that if you care about church-state separation or religion getting in the way of your bodily rights, your sexual rights, anything like that, well, Republicans are doing that. Do you want to fight against it or not? And that, to me, is the most obvious use of your skills and time and volunteer time or whatever it is, donations. So it's... I've had this argument. I've been reamed for this argument too, which is, it's not that atheists have to be Democrats, but if you care about religion not taking over the country, there is a way to do that.
The only thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and here's the funny thing. I'll add one more thing to that, which is, if you don't care about any of those issues, if you are an atheist and you don't care about abortion rights, you don't care about protecting gay marriage, which is in jeopardy, by the way, the Supreme Court, because we've allowed anti-wokeness to take over everything and elect Donald Trump and appoint three justices, they may very well, they're going to strike down Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade is already dead, effectively, but they will strike it down. And gay marriage could be next. Right to contraceptives. These are basic issues that atheists, by the way, won the battle on like 50 years ago. And because of this absolute atrocious direction we've gone, now have to refight these battles. Now, let's say you're an atheist and you don't care about any of those issues. You don't care about any of that stuff. What do you care about? You're just a person who's mad that someone else believes an imaginary thing and you don't care about any of the effects of that imaginary thing. Like, what would you even stand for then? You're just mad about someone's thought that's wrong. That's what you're mad about? Like, if you don't care about the effects of religion on our society, then what do you care about?
On the flip side of that, we talked about this on my podcast a couple of weeks ago, which is why I bring it up. There's like a $100 million campaign to promote Jesus, just Jesus, not a church, not a denomination, just Jesus. And the same argument could be made, which is, I know you want people to just get saved and believe in Jesus. I get that as a strategy of what you're trying to do, but I think it is impossible to say all of you should accept Jesus without addressing the effects of what that does and the consequences of where we are as a nation because of people who believe in Jesus. You can't unlink those two things, and it seems like a waste of everyone's time and money and effort for these Christians to be promoting Jesus while trying to pretend like the people who follow Jesus are not part of the plan here. It's like, you can't unlink those two. And the same thing, like, if you care about atheism as a philosophy, I get that. But also, let's talk, you can't, who cares? Who cares unless you care about the effects of that belief?
They're doing, precisely.
And that what they're doing in the name of atheism or Christianity, or trying to push their faith on you.
And all this was to say that if you want to learn about more, you know, the issues facing the country, and opening arguments is a great way to do that. I mean, we break down, Andrew, the expert over there, you know, breaks down really complicated legal stories in a way that's accessible. And it's truly, I love that show. I kind of consider myself a listener of the show because, you know, I'm just the host to Andrew and that kind of thing. And I've learned so much over the years from him and really knowing what's going on. Getting the actual detail of these complex legal issues in the news, because it's so important these days. I mean, all of the Trump administration, it was every day was another, like, what the hell, can he do this? You know, what is the legal authority for this thing? And that's a great place to go. Serious Inquiries Only is my other show with Dr. Lindsay Osterman. Again, some of the stuff we do, I brought up the examples, but she breaks down the science of a lot of these issues. And surprise, surprise, the science never supports the reactionary anti-woke. never does. And also Philosophers in Space is a fun one that's about sci-fi. And we talk about sci-fi and different philosophical ideas in different episodes and movies and books of sci-fi stuff. So that one's super fun as well.
Awesome. Thank you for everything you do. I hope if you're listening to this podcast right now, just stop what you're doing and go subscribe to the ones Thomas just mentioned. They're fantastic.
Oh, you're too kind. Thank you so much, Hemant. I love you. And thanks for letting me on your show.
Absolutely. Thank you.